Hey, John.
Hey, Nick.
What are you doing?
Oh, I'm looking on my tongue map for Trevor.
Okay, so last week when you told me you're picking up a cartography hobby, This is what you meant.
Yeah, cartography.
Oh, God, okay. Maybe you should call it cartography.
And this is Stranger Still.
Welcome to Stranger Still,
a podcast where we answer the questions that your teachers failed to answer.
Hey, that's a good one. I'm Nick Wood.
I'm Jonathan Beacon.
How you doing? How you doing?
It's how you doing. It's a little more casual.
How you doing?
No, it's how you doing. It's good. You're leaning too into it. You sound like one of the bad guys in that show.
I'm walking here.
Okay. I'm convinced.
How's it going, John?
Pretty good.
Remember when you were in school? And you just believed everything your teacher told you?
No.
Oh.
Because I was so punk.
Yeah. And you've never outgrown that.
I rebelled.
That's what I love about you.
Wow. What a backhanded, wonderful thing to say about me.
So
I used to write really nice things in the back of my friend's hand. So it's,
yeah.
When you, someone
the Pen 15 Club?
Yeah. That was a very backhanded compliment to be a member of that.
That's how you get in.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of things that we did when we were in school, we learned some things, and we've already done an episode like this, but I had to go back and figure out what we talked about last time to make sure I didn't repeat any of them.
Do you have a list of those?
Yeah, hang on, let me pull it up here if I use the right mouse.
They're pronounced meese, if you have plural.
I do have two meese.
Nick is holding his finger up to say one moment. He is making it so that he's actually wasting more time by holding his finger in the air to tell us one moment rather than using that finger to get to the right spot on his surface.
You don't call me out like that, man.
And very committed to the dramatic aspect of this. He's building the tension.
So we talked about how there's more than five senses.
Mm-hmm.
How
I got more five senses in my bank.
Deoxygenated blood is not blue.
Mm-hmm.
People did not believe the world was flat. Thomas Edison did not invent the light bulb, and toilets do not flush the other way in the Southern Hemisphere. Those were the five. We did have some honorable mentions, which were the North Star is the brightest star, an apple fell on Isaac Newton's head, George Washington cut down a cherry tree, and the tongue map, which is something I've always wanted to talk about because people still believe in the tongue map.
Mm-hmm.
Which is bizarre to me.
We've actually mentioned a spoiler to the tongue map in a previous episode.
Yeah.
I don't remember which one.
When I was looking through this, I had a bunch of ideas, and I feel like we've talked about a lot of them. And I thought we maybe did another episode like Five Lies Your Teacher Taught You, but I couldn't find any. So maybe I'm just like in a fugue state when we record these, and I'm just, I don't know. But we've got five more lies that your teacher taught you. At least they taught me. I don't know about you. You picked these out of a list of 10 that I had provided to you.
There are some other really good ones on there too, but...
Well, that just means we can do another one in a very long time.
Cause even
it's been
more.
A long time since we've done this.
Yeah, we're going to start franchising.
Yeah.
This episode.
just this series of episodes. Uh-huh. So we've got some ones that on the surface are pretty straightforward, but when you like scratch that surface, they're incredibly interesting, and there's a lot to be learned just based on like five sentences here. Because we're going to talk about the myth that Einstein failed math, carrots help your vision, tongue maps, lightning striking twice or not striking twice in the same place, and the idea of left brain versus right brain people and thinking and all that stuff.
Yeah, that we're going to, I mean, that's a solid, sounds like it's going to be a very political ending with, we're going
to
lose.
You'll have to go left versus right politically.
No, but.
I didn't even think of that.
Well, but that's the first thing that came to me because that's a big thing with like Dave Rubin and all the libertarians.
Oh,
they talk about being left-brained and being right-brained.
Okay,
and alphas,
well,
and
we'll get to dispel a lot of that later on in this episode. But I think we should start with, since we're talking about teachers, we should talk about how Einstein supposedly failed math.
Yeah.
Have you heard this one before?
Yeah.
I think teachers mostly just like use it as a motivational phrase to say like, just because you aren't good at something doesn't mean you can't become good at it. Because Einstein wasn't good at math, but then he went on to publish establish the theory of relativity.
Like, right. It's a good example of something. Like Michael Jordan is bad at eating cereal. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
He would just miss it. He would just put the spoon whooshing right past.
Yeah.
He'd go hole in one, and then he'd miss immediately. It was embarrassing.
You went with him playing golf?
No. That's what they say when they put in the basket. That's Michael Jordan's catchphrase. Oh. Hole in one.
Oh,
he's
talking, okay.
He's referring
okay.
to the basketball, Nick.
Got it. Okay. Well, I was going to say maybe you suck at drawing, but you could grow up to create the Mona Lisa. And that'd be great, except that this is not true.
Yeah, or maybe you're bad at memes, and you could go up and be F. Jerry and just steal them.
Yeah, God. you're pulling out all the stops today.
Yeah.
Just making all
Nothing
kinds of enemies.
Nothing is optional.
Hey, you're unstoppable. So this is so untrue, I have no idea where it even came from. Because Einstein did great in school, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
His teachers never really thought that he was that exceptional. Like, he would go on to influence the world of physics. But he did receive good grades. By the age of 11, he was already reading college-level physics textbooks. But he did have a hard time following, like, the strict rules that his school apparently had. And that's about, like, the only trouble he had in school. And I wonder if maybe that's where this came from, where teachers were like, oh,
Einstein
just a brat
bad in math because he wasn't wearing the proper uniform and didn't tuck in his shirt.
Yeah.
He wasn't holding his knuckles down properly for the nuns
and
to smack him.
And he put his elbows on the table. Can you believe it?
Yeah. Yep.
How are you supposed to add when you have elbows on the table?
Not a hootenanny of
so
a class.
I'll
tell you that.
One important thing about Albert Einstein was that he was born in Germany, and he went to school in Germany for like the first 16 and a half years of his life.
Yeah.
Near the end of his high school career, he set his college sights on Zurich Polytechnic in Switzerland, and he went through the entrance exam, which was given in French, and he failed the entrance exam.
Oof.
And this is...
They probably was like, nice going, Einstein.
Wait, that doesn't exist yet. Hey, that was after you. So most people will say, well, yeah, he failed math, but that's also not truth. He passed the math portion of the exam, but failed the language, botany, and zoology sections.
Wow.
And he blamed it on the exam.
Frank Einstein's monster.
That's all you get from me.
Okay.
He blamed it on the exam being given in French. And he went on to finish his last year or so of high school in Switzerland, where he was automatically admitted to Zurich Polytechnic. I think it was like one of those things where, like, if you go to high school here in Cedar Rapids, you basically get an automatic into the University of Iowa.
Yeah.
I think it was kind of that deal. So he's like, well, I want to go there, so I'm just going to go to school in Switzerland, so I get automatically put in.
Heck yeah, dude. And good food.
Hey,
and healthcare and stuff. Oh, yep.
Good prisons.
The great prisons. Oh my goodness. If you want to get reformed, there's one place to commit a crime, and that's Sweden.
Yeah, so I said Switzerland. It is Switzerland. Sweden's a different place.
Sweden also has a very good prison.
While I was researching this, so I don't have any idea where this came from, but while I was researching this, I came across some other false facts about Einstein that people believe that I thought I would just squeeze in here to pad out this episode. People say that he started talking later than most kids, and Einstein self-reported that his parents were worried about when he started talking, but yeah. Apparently his grandparents were like, nah, he's good. Nah, brah. He's good. Apparently, he wasn't likely dyslexic like most people believe, but he did have signs of Asperger's as a kid because he was kind of a loner. He'd repeat a lot of sentences, stuff like that. So there is a little bit of truth to that school of thought.
I always called it Asperger's.
Like, what did I say?
Asperger's.
Oh.
But I think that might be regional because I also go, weird.
Hey,
come on. We don't just say forget about it. We also say,
I think
like,
you do. I'm walking here. We already did that.
Pass the spaghetti about it. You know?
So it might not be clear where that misconception came from, but you know what is clear? My vision. Because
wow.
I eat carrots.
Oh, what it's... Wow. If only I had transitions as smooth as that, I'd be sliding all over the place.
You'd be slipping and sliding.
Yep.
You'd be like Vaseline on a slip and slide.
I'd be like Vaseline on a carrot that I eat to make my eyes look better.
Gross. That's not...
I was trying to transition into it. It didn't work as well as yours.
I want to apologize for lying because I don't eat a lot of carrots. They make my throat feel weird.
You're weird.
If anyone else... Like, I like carrots. I like the taste. but when I eat too many, it feels like I have a burp stuck at the back of my throat. Does anyone else feel this? Or am I like allergic to carrots?
You probably, I mean, are they like dry? Is it like dry in the back of your throat?
No, no, I don't know what it is. Okay. Someone, I'll research it someday. So you've heard this, right? That carrots help your vision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you heard that carrots help your night vision?
Yes.
Because I heard that a lot when I was a kid, and I bought it.
It helped me see better at night. I bought it super hard. I would eat the crap out of carrots.
Yeah, I'd like walk into my parents' room when the light was off. Like it was like daylight out, but the blinds were shut, so it was like kind of dark, and there was like I can see everything.
Yeah. And you eat a carrot like 5 minutes earlier.
Yeah.
And you're all stoked about it.
Yeah. So the idea that carrots help your vision comes from the idea that it contains beta carotene, and beta carotene is then converted in your body into vitamin A, and vitamin A does help your eyes. It makes healthy cones. So
yeah, it must be nice.
Yeah, I'm sorry, bud. I think yours is the rods.
I'm missing the rods, some rods and some cones.
Some rods and cones.
And now I can't see the colors.
Yeah. So if you do have like a vitamin A deficiency, vitamin A might help your vision, can certainly help your vision. Supplements can help. However, it's not just carrots that have beta carotene.
It's snowman noses. I'm sorry, snow people noses.
Snow people noses. There's like a bunch of vegetables have beta carotene. So as long as you're eating your vegetables, your vision's not going to get any more improved if you just switch to only carrots.
Mm-hmm.
Your skin might turn orange, but that'd be pretty funny. I mentioned that vitamin A makes healthy cones because this might be
Insult all the Oompa Loompas?
Yes.
Okay, just want to make that clear on the record.
Yes, thank you. I'm not ashamed.
Okay.
I'm not ashamed.
Oompa Loompa doopity not.
You should try to make a song up right now. So I think that because it like makes healthy cones, I think this is where people will start to think you can improve your night vision with carrots. And the origin of this misconception has a super fascinating twist, which is, and this is a theory that we can't exactly say that this is where the misconception was born, but it's pretty damn convincing. So imagine it's World War II. You're in the UK. Germany keeps sending planes to drop bombs on your country at night. So eventually, your city begins doing blackouts at night so the German planes can't find your city and drop the bombs on you. But one night during the Blitzkrieg, the planes get pushed back by UK airplanes. Turns out it's because they'd been eating carrots. At least that's what they wanted the Germans to think. In 1940...
Hi, I'm Nick. Like, it sounded like such an introduction. I was ready to listen to your story.
I'm Nick.
And I'm selling Nick's carrots.
Yeah. So in 1940, a night fighter named John Cunningham took down a German plane in the dead of night, and the newspapers, like, the next day had reported it was because he ate a crap load of carrots, because that's what the Ministry of Defense had told the newspapers to publish. And it went so far, the UK began putting up propaganda posters saying, want to see great during the blackouts? Eat carrots. Want to be as good as a soldier out on the fields? Eat carrots. And the truth was, the UK had actually invented an airborne interception radar. It was a radar on board the night plane so that they could pinpoint enemy planes without the need of lights to take them out. So in the dead night, they could just fly up, see it on their little radar, and take that plane out. And they didn't want the Germans to know about this new technology, so they gave all the credit to carrots.
Yeah.
They started putting up all this propaganda, telling all the kids to eat carrots. And the effectiveness might not have been very good, but apparently some German commanders did tell their pilots to eat more carrots.
Wow.
So it was at least a little effective. Isn't that awesome?
That's pretty damn cool. Yeah.
Carrots. Who'd have thunk?
And it made its way to America.
Yeah, it's been around for a very long time.
But now it's not that many generations back that it's been around. So it's like a modern
three
myth.
Three or four, depending on how old you are. Yeah. I mean, a lot of these are modern. Let me think.
I don't know. I could see an ancient Egyptian tongue map.
Well, let's talk about tongue maps, because if you're not hungry yet, I'll make you hungry.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Just go eat some carrots, and then you can tell me what part of your tongue
feels
is tasting
dry
those.
And is allergic to it? Yeah.
So
you should stop eating carrots.
I know, right? So I should figure that out.
It's just kind of similar to like when I'm eating pine cones and then my throat bleeds after. Does that happen to you?
Yeah. No, it just comes out the other end. The blood, that is.
Okay. What were you going to say before I need to erase that from my memory.
you regret everything. I have a stat for this one, but it's from the UK, and I tried getting stats for all of these. This is the only one I could find. It's from Ripley's, believe it or not, in the UK. So it's also only UK residents. It's not global or anything. But 50% of people in the UK believe in the tongue map. What's the tongue map, John?
Oof.
Explain to our listeners.
The middle is everything.
Explain. Well, just...
The sides are sweet, and the back is bitter, and the tip is...
The sides are sour.
Sides are sour. The front is sweet.
Yeah.
The middle's umami.
Yes.
And the back is bitter.
Yes. So
I know enough to know the fake areas.
Yeah. This is something I distinctly remember learning in like fifth grade, where everyone's probably seen this diagram. It's a tongue. On the tip, there's this little section that says sweet. And then on the sides, it says sour. On the back, it says bitter. Which one am I forgetting? Salty. Where's salty? Salty is right behind sweet, toward the front, but also kind of toward the middle.
I say umami, so that's what I'm throwing
out. That's savory.
But that's savory.
That's a different flavor.
Yeah.
That's a different taste. That's in the middle.
But that's usually not even on the tongue map because it's new.
Right, because that was recently discovered, like in the 2000s after I was out of fifth grade. Who cares? before we get to why this is wrong, let's talk about how taste buds work, because I think a lot of people don't know how this works. And for whatever reason, the diagram of this stuff kind of grosses me out. Like super close-ups.
Because it's like tiny, like a polyp.
Yeah. Well,
does it look like a sea urchin anemone?
Kind of. I think like any microscopic cutaway just grosses me out. I don't know why.
Yeah. And you know what? It's 2019. It's time to stop calling them taste buds. We just got to start calling them taste pals.
Actually, call them taste papillae, because that's actually what they are. Everyone says taste buds, but they aren't called taste buds. They're called taste papillae.
That's so much better.
Yeah. So the papillae are these little bumps. Those are the bumps.
Next time I'm going to go to a restaurant, I'm just going to go, ooh, my papillae. It's delicious.
The bumps on your tongue are the papillae. They contain the taste buds. And I got numbers all over the place for this, depending on your source. One papillae can contain anywhere between 1,000 and 10,000 taste buds. The taste buds, again, I got figures. Sorry, no, your mouth contains 1,000 to 10,000 taste buds. The papillae have 10 to 100 taste buds in them.
Wow. But did you know that if you had a group of 10 papillae or more, they're called a gaggle?
A gaggle of papillae?
Mm-hmm.
Is that because you
gag on them? If you choke on your tongue.
Yeah. So in these taste buds, inside the papillae, there's cells that respond to certain tastants that come from the food. They're just chemicals that come from the food.
Did you say tastants?
Yeah, tastants is what they're called. They're the chemicals that respond
to... Oh, I'm going to cook you up some tastants. Let me get these thrown in this here chicken soup, you know?
Vegan chicken soup.
Yeah.
But the tastants will come in. They activate a nerve. That nerve lights up, sends a signal to your brain, says you're eating sour food or savory food, whatever it is. We, like as a society, decide what different flavors
Wait,
are.
Wait, do we live in a society?
We do.
Okay.
We as a society, just you and me.
Okay.
We're a society, you and me.
That's we it. Are a society.
Yeah. We dictate tastings based on which chemicals light up which cells in your taste buds. So this is why we recently discovered umami or savory, because we found out it's a different chemical compound that activates different cells compared to sour, salty, sweet, or bitter. There's theories out there that there's other taste buds like alkaline, carbonation, or
collect
fats.
Them all.
What?
Collect them all.
Yeah, I got to collect them all. Fats is probably the most convincing one, because how would you describe the taste of fats?
I don't know.
Umami, but not quite.
It's heavier.
Yeah, it's grosser.
Yeah, but
so,
in a good way.
I will concede that it is true there are areas of your mouth that have different concentrations of taste buds, but they're all generally in the same area. Like the middle of your mouth has less taste buds just in general for all of these taste buds. The sides of your mouth are more sensitive to every flavor, and the back of your mouth is more sensitive to bitter. They believe that it's an evolutionary trait, so that if you eat something poisonous, you have a gag reflex on it before it goes down your gullet.
First of all, I've just got so many ideas for different adventures of the taste buds.
Yeah.
That you would write up as a webcomic.
Yeah.
And there'd be like, Fats would be one of the characters.
Yeah.
And umami.
Yo, Fats.
Yeah. And they would just journey around the tongue and avoid poison.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Yeah.
That sounds like a really short-lived webcomic.
Oh, man. At least two episodes.
But the most concentrated area of taste buds are along the sides and back. All of them make a horseshoe shape around the sides and back of your tongue. Nothing about sweet being at the front. Nothing like that. So... I know that's hard to swallow, but you know what else is hard to swallow?
Oof.
Lightning.
Not as smooth. Yeah, lightning is hard to follow because it never strikes the same place twice, Nicholas. Yep.
So you've heard that old phrase, lightning never strikes the same place twice.
Yeah.
I was always taught it as like a scientific factoid along the same vein as like in conjunction with no two snowflakes have the same shape.
Yeah, that's perfect comparison.
Yeah. But it's also a phrase that's been, I mean, people use it to say like, boy, that'll never happen again. Like you meet a celebrity in your local gas station in Podunk, Iowa. Oh, that'll never happen again.
Oh, man. Is that Joseph Biden in the celebrity aisle?
Sure. So this one's pretty
good. I got a story about him, actually, after this. That is similar, and that's why you reminded me.
Okay.
The origin of pie in the sky after the break.
Are we going to break now?
No, no. We'll go to break later, but I'll tell you about Joe Biden and pie in the sky's origin. Okay.
So this one's pretty straightforward. Lightning strikes the same place twice all the time. In fact, the Empire State Building reports it's struck by lightning on average 23 times per year. 23 to 24 times per year. But there's more to it than that, because I want to talk about how lightning works, John.
Oof. How's it work, Nicholas? I'm getting some info pulled up.
Oh, lightning occurs when a bunch of static builds up in a cloud, because all these molecules are rubbing against each other. They build up this static electricity, just like when you rub your feet on the ground, except it's a cloud. The bottom of the cloud, it holds a bunch of negatively charged ions or electrons, and this pushes the like pushes away. The opposite of opposites attract. What's that called?
The magnetic fields?
Yeah.
Opposites repel? Retract? Repel?
No, the same's repel.
Same's repel, opposites attract.
But say it in a better way than I said it.
Same's is...
That's, you just added repel-ices. An S to what I said.
It's Latin.
Oh, it's a Harry Potter spell now. So on the ground, underneath the cloud, it pushes all the negatively charged ions away and just leaves positively charged ions.
Love it.
As the positively charged ions build up, they start to like move towards the clouds in the sky, which is why pointy things are closer. That's why they get struck by lightning more, like lightning rods and stuff. It's easier to build up that and get closer to the sky. And as soon as it gets close enough, the lightning opens up a channel of air, travels down along these positively charged ions, discharges all that electricity into the ground. Ta-da, you have lightning.
That so lightning happens. Wouldn't exist in a vacuum because it has to have an air flow.
It just has to have out of the way. Particles to travel along.
All right.
This all happens within tens of milliseconds. But what's interesting is typically it doesn't just happen once. Whenever you see lightning, it's actually probably 3 to 4 lightning strikes all at once.
So it's creating like a little like river down to the earth.
Yeah.
Based out of particles, like a section
static
of
electricity.
Getting gross.
Yeah. So there's a lot of static up in this cloud. There's a prime opportunity for all of that to come down to the ground. So when you see a lightning strike, it's striking the same area 3 to 4 times just in that one moment.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say lightning and strike the same place twice, if you see lightning, you're already wrong. See what I'm getting at here?
Yeah.
But also there's just, like I said, the Empire State Building gets struck by lightning all the time. It's just that you can't see like those 3 to 4 with your naked eye. But here's some other
fun...
But
if you put a little like shorts on your eyeballs, maybe you can see them.
Oh,
yeah.
I see what you did.
You ever think about not having a naked eye?
I haven't.
Mm-hmm.
And now I don't like the image that you've conjured in my mind.
Yeah.
We're not sponsored by...
Go to johnseyewear.com and you're going to see all the little hats that I made for your eyeballs.
I wasn't thinking hats. Now I'm thinking hats.
Yeah, little eyeball hats.
Do they go under your eyelid?
They go under your eyelid, over your eyeball. And they are completely waterproof. It's not a big deal. Just stop whining about it. That's
hydrophobic, because that'd probably make your eyes really dry.
Okay. Well, that's why they've got built-in moisturizer.
Clear eyes. That's all I can think of.
Oh, man. That guy's the worst.
Ben Stein?
Yes.
Is he?
Oh, he's the worst.
But like, you can win Ben Stein's money. What's wrong with that?
I would like to win all of his money and then use that money to put him in a school to learn politics better.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Here's some other fun lightning facts, John, just to pad this episode even more. Lightning is around 54,000 degrees Fahrenheit,
which
is like 10 times the temperature of the surface of the sun.
Okay.
You know what's interesting? I found out that the surface of the sun is only like 6,000 degrees Fahrenheit. I thought it was way more, but that's once you get past the surface.
So don't be late. Act now.
Supplies are running out?
Right. I don't remember those words. Might as well be walking on the sun.
You know, Smash Mouth did have
good.
Some bangers.
They were good.
They had some bangers.
That was a really good one.
It was.
They also had one called, like, I don't know.
Yeah, whatever. Thunder comes from the air collapsing in around that channel of air that the lightning creates.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a huge smack of air smacking against each other, clapping cheeks. Is that inappropriate?
No. I clap my cheeks every day.
Don't.
See?
The odds of being struck by lightning in your life is only 1 in 3,000, which I thought was a lot lower than I expected.
And the odds of getting hit by heavening, which is when the ground rises up to meet the sky in a horrific display, is zero, because it's fake.
Get on it. Tectonic plates just explode. I don't know.
I wish somebody would invent heavening. It would be like the opposite of lightning. It's so brandable.
Yeah.
You would just be walking around and a pillar would jump up into the sky.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
That sounds like something from an anime.
It's like a Final Fantasy
thing. That's the same thing I said.
Okay. Put it in game form. Yeah.
So lightning really gets my brain going. From the left side of my brain, I'm like, man, that's fascinating. But from the right side of my brain, I'm like, that imagery of lightning is beautiful.
That's about the same.
Or does it?
Okay.
You like that transition? That's the best I could come up with.
But yeah. Pretty, they don't get any smoother.
They do. So you've heard this idea that, like, there's left-brained people who are more critical and logical, and then there's right-brained people that are more creative and artistic.
Yeah, because we have big pieces of meat in our heads with lightning in them.
Yeah.
And
miniature lightning.
Miniature lightnings.
Yeah. Little tiny lightning.
And we don't know how that works yet, so we have to make stuff up.
We just
like
make
that up
a bunch of crap. This idea is actually a lot more recent than I thought it would be, because it came from a study done in the 1960s by a guy named Roger W. Sperry. The 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
60 years ago.
That is going to tie into something else later, too.
Okay.
Keep that in mind.
Yeah. So he did some studies on the brain, and he just, I guess, decided that the brain, the left side of the brain, was responsible for logic, sequencing, linear thinking, mathematics, facts, and thinking in words, whereas the right brain was responsible for imagination, holistic thinking, intuition, arts, rhythm, nonverbal cues,
and essential oils.
And essential oils.
You hippie.
Feelings, feeling visualization, and daydreaming. And to be fair, he got some of this right, which is crazy, but we'll get into it. So we'll start with the functions of the brain.
Okay.
Holistically, the frontal lobe, which is the front part of your brain, is responsible for things like thinking and memory and movement. The temporal lobe, which is back down a little bit behind that, helps with hearing, emotions, and that sort of thing. Your parietal lobe helps you with language, your sense of touch. Occipital lobe manages your sight. Cerebellum helps with your coordination. Your brain stem does all of the things your body does that you don't have to think about doing, like breathing, blinking, and all that crap. But there are some functions that are handled on one side and not the other. Like, for instance, we know that some language functions, verbal language functions, are handled by the left side of the brain. And we know this because people that have had strokes that damage the left side of their brain sometimes lose speech functions, but they can understand language just fine. It's also true that the left side of your brain controls the right side of your body and vice versa. I thought that would be a myth, but it's not. If you look at people that have had their corpus callosum severed, which is the part of your brain that helps the right side communicate with the left side, you'll also find that nonverbal language is controlled by the right side of the brain. Stuff like that. We know that there are functions not shared on both sides of the brain. However, I wouldn't personally say that having verbal language skills makes you better at math or making critical decisions or something like that.
It becomes way too arbitrary at that point.
Yeah, or like, if you can't verbally speak, but you can write and do sign language, that doesn't make you better at drawing. So to further prove my point, I did find a pretty big study from the University of Utah in 2013 that looked at the brain scans of 1,011 people. Just like, they were trying to figure out if there's any signs of hemisphere preference, which is to say, like, if someone says they're a left-brained person when they're doing normal tasks, is that side of their brain used more comparatively to a right-brained person, traditionally speaking? And want to take a guess at what they found?
That it totally worked 100%.
100% of the time.
Great.
No evidence.
Did they have to cut anybody in half?
No, not this time.
Okay.
In the 60s.
Scary.
It's a different story. So what they came up with was no evidence of sightedness was found. They did find, and this is like just normal brain functioning stuff, they found several examples of the left and right brain working together to solve math problems or understand someone talking to them. And this, like,
working together, just like the taste buds.
Yeah, they work with the papillae.
Yeah, the papillae.
So
I mean, I was referring to the cartoon that doesn't exist yet, not the
right.
Not the actual
fats is working with
umami.
I was trying to think of salts. I don't know. So an example would be like someone was talking to one of the people hooked up to an MRI or whatever, and the left brain would take in the words that the person was saying, but the right brain would interpret the tone that was being used by the person talking and the context of what they were saying. These two came together to...
make a baby? What's that movement with your hands?
That's,
okay.
That's making babies.
So when a right brain really likes the left brain...
Yeah, they come together.
Okay.
And they help you understand how language works. If you didn't have that, it'd be hard to have a conversation with someone. That's just how normal brain function works, unless you have your corpus callosum severed. I've talked about this a lot.
In the corpus callosum. Yeah. That's where you get your corpus callosum severed.
But with people that have their corpus callosum severed, they like put a partition between their eyes, and then with their, say, I think it's their right, or with their left eye, they'd show them the word face spelled out. And they'd be like, all right, what word is written there? And they'd be like, I have no idea. I can't tell you. But they can draw it because the left side of their brain isn't connected to the right side of their brain anymore. They can't verbalize the word that they're seeing. But the right side of the brain, which is nonverbal language, can write it down. They can draw it.
So if they ever wink with their left eyes, they can't read.
Yeah.
Wink.
Yeah. So what they found basically is that, yes, the left side does control some things. Yes, the right side does control some things. But in people that say they're more left-brained or right-brained...
Unity.
Yeah, there's no...
We need unity, Nick.
We just need unity.
We need the left and
world.
The right to come together.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
Left is best.
Stuff it.
That's a literal hashtag.
But like people who say they're left-brained or right-brained saw no increased activity on either side of those brains. It was just normal brain function. That's just how it works.
Mm-hmm.
So... we can put this one to rest. Quit saying I'm a right-brained person because that's a dumb thing to say.
It's a pretty dumb thing to say.
It means you can't talk to people.
Yes. And one thing that it always reminds me of, I've mentioned to you before in the past,
yeah,
is GoldenEye, when you can play with two controllers.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with this.
And you were not familiar. That one person literally... I think it's also that one person controls shooting and the other person... can't do anything but move left and right and turn. It's pretty fun.
You could do that with Star Wars Pod Racer. And people started like making custom controllers for it.
Yeah, I remember seeing how nuts those are.
Those are pretty crazy.
I also wonder what like drugs are going to be like in the future.
Of course. That's where your brain always goes.
Yeah. Where you would be able to numb half of your brain for
just
fun.
For a little bit.
Yeah.
Just to be like, I don't want to talk right now.
I don't
now.
Remember shapes, but I can remember sounds, man. That, and I'm going to listen to this song.
That reminds me of...
about shapes. Oh, no, what are they talking about? You know?
I have no idea.
It'd be fun. Drugs of the future.
I don't understand half the world anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That reminds me of that Black Mirror episode. One of the best ones. In the newest? No.
The second newest.
Second newest season. I haven't watched the newest season.
Me neither.
It had like Miley Cyrus in it. But anyway.
No, I did see that. That was good.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
But Black Museum, I think, is what it's called.
Yes.
It's like the best episode.
It's very good.
And I'm not just saying that because it was inspired by a short story written by Penn Jillette.
Oh, wow.
Just actually the part that
the best a man can get.
Referring to, yeah. The part that reminds me of this is the part that he wrote. Guy like hooks up his brain to patients' brains to figure out what's wrong with them, and then it kind of escalates from there.
Mm-hmm.
Go watch it, people. It's incredibly not safe for children, but it's so good. I love Black Mirror. Okay, I said it.
Wow, that's a bold stance to take.
I know.
Is that too controversial for 2019?
Yeah, let's take.
We'll find
break.
Out.
John.
Yeah.
You mentioned before people can listen to our bonus episodes. Where can they do that?
They can go to StrangerSocialShow.com.
Well, they have to give us money to listen to our bonus episodes.
So they can go to Patreon.com. After, they go to StrangerSocialShow.com and click the Patreon link.
Yes. So we reactivated our Patreon. We've got, what is it?
30 days straight. It's not that, a bonus material with silences between.
Yeah.
If you wait 7 hours between each one.
We've got like a year and a half of bonus episodes up on there.
Mm-hmm.
Recently we talked about my adventures with this iMac. I think my favorite one was when we read fan fiction.
That was very good.
Yeah.
I wish we did a video.
I know. I came up with this idea that we would say whoever was the first one to laugh would lose, but then that made for really bad audio. So we just started laughing because it's funny, funny stuff.
It was very. Yeah.
It'd make a really good video. So we'll have to do that sometime.
Yeah, maybe we'll just publish it with like a audio react.
Yeah. So if you want to support the show, it's helped us upgrade our equipment. It's helped us. Like I bought the field mic with it. I've bought the K2 EMF reader with it.
Mm-hmm.
It helps us go out and do stuff. Like we went to the Paranormal Expo a long time ago. What else have we done?
We've bought stuff for experiments in-house.
Oh, yeah. I bought Thermid stuff. Yeah. So if you like the show, by no means feel obligated, but it's a nice way to help us upgrade our stuff.
Let me teach you a little bit about one of the things I learned by being on this show.
Yeah.
Is the importance of word structure.
Yeah.
So by no means feel obligated. I'm going to put a comma there because we need that money.
Yeah. It just helps us make a better product. So if you like it, that's a nice way to improve what we're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
So John, you learned about Pie in the Sky. Tell me about this.
Yeah, so the podcast I made a little music for in the past.
Yeah.
I also listen to him every day, or watch him at least. It's The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
Mm.
You may know him from MSNBC.
Yeah.
They got some really good coverage with what's going on in the U.S. right now. But that one of the things they mentioned was that Joe Biden likes to attack Grandpa Bernie.
Okay.
And say that his ideas are pie in the sky. They're pie in the sky. And you've probably heard that phrase before, right?
Yeah, but I've never heard it used in that context. Yeah,
that his ideas, they're pie in the sky. Like, they're way out of reach is kind of what my brain goes to.
Okay.
But Pie in the Sky is actually the name of a song written by Annie DeFranco and Utah Phillips in 1965.
Oh.
And it was a very progressive song, actually, that is used to describe the opposite of what he was describing it as.
So I guess he's not wrong.
So, yeah.
Technically speaking.
So he was kind of giving him a compliment, because they'll say, "You will eat by and by in that glorious land above the sky." It's about dying and going to heaven.
Oh, okay.
"Work and pray, live on hay. You'll get pie in the sky when you die."
Oh, interesting.
Yep.
So Joe Biden had a little mental slip up just once. That's never going to happen again.
Makes me so sad every time.
Poor guy. What else do we have to talk about? Anything?
That's it, man. What else do you want from me? I thought that was pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Thanks, Majority Report.
Thanks. And thank you for listening. I'm still Nick.
I'm still John.
This is Stranger Still.